This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
You're listening to KCBS In Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area is talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In Depth.
Welcome to KCBS In Depth, broadcasting throughout the Bay Area and streaming on the Odyssey app. I'm Mary Hughes. This week, we're turning the focus onto California's youth and mental health. We'll look at the conversations that young people are having, the care they are shaping, and at the work going on behind the scenes to ensure that mental health wellness is available for all young people. Starting with Never a Bother. That's the name of a campaign in California. It's part of the state's Children and Youth Behavioral Health Initiative and was created by the California Department of Public Health's Office of Suicide Prevention and more than 400 youth and young adults across California. The purpose of this campaign? To reach young people who are struggling and who need support when it comes to their mental health and well-being. To tell us more about Never a Bother, we hear from Dr. Sohil Sood, Director of the California Health and Human Service Agency's Children and Youth Behavioral Health Initiative, and Angela Soto Cerros, a member of the Youth Advisory Board. Thank you both so much for speaking with me on this important campaign and topic.
Thank you, Mary. It's good to be here.
Thank you so much for inviting us.
What's the driving force and motivation behind creating Never a Bother?
So the driving force, in the creation of the campaign, a lot of members resonated with the fact that I can speak from my personal experience. I would sometimes not reach out to my support system because I didn't want to add more to their plate. I know everybody has a lot going on in their lives, and I just didn't want to feel like a bother. And when we all talked about that, there was a lot of people resonating with that. And we wanted to have this campaign really emphasize that no one is ever a bother. You deserve to reach out to your support systems, whatever it is that you're going through, whether that's a situation going on or whatever you're feeling, it is valid. It matters. You deserve to reach out for that help. You deserve to get that support system. You deserve to be heard and to be understood. And that was really something that we wanted to really drive into the campaign, that you are never a bother for reaching out, and that there are people and there are resources for you to help you with whatever it is that you need.
Dr. Sood, was that something that you were also seeing and experiencing in the work that you do, that this a campaign like this is needed?
Oh, absolutely. I'll start with the numbers. So for far too long, suicide has been a leading cause of death among youth and young adults. And depending on how you slice the data, for decades, it's essentially been the second or third top reason why the lives of these young people end prematurely. And behind each of these statistics is a person, right? And I'm a hospital-based pediatrician. I've seen this firsthand. I've treated youth for self-harm from medication ingestions and drug overdoses. And then you break that down, and we see disproportionate rates of suicidal ideation and planning in certain communities, especially but not limited to tribal communities and those who identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or queer. And so, you know, when you ask about the driving force, I think I would just emphasize also that none of this needs to be our destiny. Like, it doesn't need to be this way. Suicide can be prevented, and that's why we all need to lean in here and address this.
Well, and Angela, you touched on a little bit some of what you have experienced yourself. Is that something that you were seeing in other people in your peer groups or in family and friends that kind of emphasized the importance of feeling like you're not a bother when you're reaching out and asking for help?
Yeah, just personally speaking, the suicidal ideation experiencing, I've had to go with loved ones to the hospital because they were either overdosing or they were trying to take their own lives. And then experiencing suicidal ideation myself has been an eye-opener, and just kind of like seeing face-to-face how what a dark place that can be. And that me reaching that point, I realized that I didn't deserve to go through this, and no one ever deserves to get to that point. So it's my own personal experiences, the experiences of my loved ones going through suicidal ideation through so many of the most recent events in the world. And even reflecting on my younger self, not being able to find resources, not having the language to describe what was going on, facing backlash from my family because of heavy stigma, whether that's through personal beliefs or culture, it all kind of like snowballed into this involvement of never a bother, because I really want to make sure that people know that it is... Mental health is something that everybody has. Mental health is something that we're all going to struggle at some point of our lives, and that it is going to be okay. Because it's really easy to focus on the now and think that it's going to be forever, but it's something that we'll all get through.
Well, and sometimes, you know, all it takes is just having that one person or moment where you're being heard, or you're able to just express, hey, this is what I'm going through and I don't know what to do. And it can change everything. Dr. Sood, from the perspective of the work you do and your involvement there, and knowing the kind of support that Angela and others need and seek out and need to have there for them, what's something that others can do, adults in particular, to really support young people with what they're going through, whether it's depression or grief or even thoughts of suicide?
Yeah, appreciate the question. Let me plug the website. So neverabother.org. It's very easy to navigate, and really it's organized to address that very question. So when you go to it, at the top, you'll see a statement that basically says, I'm here for myself, I'm here for a friend, or I'm here for a youth in my care. And so for the adults out there, you know, go to the youth in my care section. And when you go there, you'll see that the approach essentially has three points to it, about how to have that conversation, how to prioritize safety, and how to get help. And so, you know, I think if we focus on about having that conversation with someone who's coming to you, first check yourself, learning that a child or a youth in your care is thinking about suicide, it can be very scary. So stay calm, take their feelings seriously, and listen without dismissal or judgment, right? Express gratitude for the honesty there. And then in terms of turning to actions that one should take to prioritize safety, think about your surroundings. Remove any weapons from your home at best, or secure them really at minimum. Think about where your medications are stored in the house and how they can be safely stored. Stay with your child. And then finally, get help. So any child who's really having suicidal thoughts should be seen by a mental health professional. And a great starting point for that is the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988. It's 24 hours a day, available, any phone, anywhere. And then based on your judgment about the urgency of a situation, you can, of course, always bring them to an emergency room. So none of these are foolproof, but all are so important in responding to the crisis at hand.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing those details and giving a rundown a little bit of what people can find when they go to Never a Bother and are looking at that, whether it's for someone in their care, for themselves, for a friend. It's vital information and a toolkit of sorts that you can have and use if you need to. Coming at it from a younger perspective, Angela, what can young people and those who love them and care about them find, from your perspective, find at Never a Bother?
So one thing that the Youth Advisory Board, we all talked about, we reviewed a bunch of websites, a bunch of resources that were made for youth, and found that a lot of them were not approachable or were not not understanding, but they weren't really approachable or easy to navigate. And with the Never a Bother campaign, we really wanted to make the website easy, well, straight to the point, but also very friendly, very warm, having those warm colors, having that easy to read text, having the accessibility if someone needs to read in Spanish and other languages. We just really wanted to create this website to be accessible for all, no matter where, what walks of life that you're coming from. The beautiful thing is that there is a resource of kind of walking you through what does happen when you reach out to 988. What does that look like? What to expect? Since that can be a barrier that a lot experience of like, well, what's going to happen? Are the police going to be called? Am I, so the anxiety is a thing. but just a lot of free posters, social media posts, videos of actual youth talking about their experiences, warning signs, suicide warning signs, and just overall, it's a great resource because we really did discuss and spent a lot of time on how we want this website to look like through our perspectives, from our loved ones' perspectives, really thinking how can we make this accessible, friendly, and straight to the point for someone in crisis.
Yeah, I've been to the site several times, and I'm not young anymore, but I appreciate the bright colors. It really does kind of take your attention into these specific spaces on the site, and then that can hopefully trigger your mind to recognize what's being asked there, the lifelines that are being presented, and kind of pull you in. We've talked a little bit about what young people are facing, and as Angela, you just mentioned, anxiety is a huge part of this, and there is so much going on in the world, and I think younger people are sort of facing it and seeing it in ways that perhaps generations before did not. When we are talking about social media, when we are talking about awareness on a global level of all the things that are going on. So life can feel incredibly overwhelming. And you've been kind enough to share some of what you have gone through and others in your life have gone through. What advice would you give to other young people who are struggling, who might be hearing this? And hearing something of themselves in this, what's your advice to them?
I've been doing a lot of reflection. I've realized that when I think about my past self struggling through depression, anxiety, and so much more, I had this idea that there would be this magical cure for all of it. Meanwhile, I was struggling to find resources for myself or seeing my family and friends go through the same or similar struggles as I was going through. I don't know where I got this, like, I'll have this cure someday. I'll find something someday. But what I'm having to learn currently is that I have to take a step back. And I actually have been having to disconnect from social media because everything's trying to grab my attention. And if everything's trying to get my attention, then how am I supposed to have that attention for myself? And just really trying to focus what's in front of me And I know it's so hard with the feeling of FOMO, fear of missing out. It is so real and it is so there. But really having to realize that I have to take care of my basics. And it, I, it, if my past self could hear my current self, they'd be like, "What? What do you mean? The basics? What does that mean?" And it really is just going outside. And I know it sounds so simple, but just being out and taking everything about your surroundings slowly and not, I don't know, it's such a difference from spending a day inside doom scrolling on your phone versus walking out and appreciating the sun, the trees, the birds, the people walking out, the dogs, whatever it is your environment may be, feeding yourself, making sure that you're drinking water. And I've been having to think about it as if I'm not able to take care of my foundation, how am I supposed to build complex, like go more beyond that? So that's one thing that if anyone out there is listening, then I would like to emphasize, let's take care of the basics and then we'll figure it out from there.
Dr. Sood, is some of what Angela's saying resonating with you as well? Is that something either you've done within your own life or that you have been able to say to other people in your life about self-care and what that can do for your mental health?
100% of what Angela said is resonating. She said it far more eloquently and poignantly than I ever could. That was so beautiful. But absolutely, we have to take care of ourselves in order to take care of other people. It's so important. If I could maybe just add one more piece about the approach to the campaign, I think and both of you have really underscored this in different ways, but as we've talked to young people about this, they have said, yes, talk about suicide, speak to us, speak to those of us who've been disproportionately impacted, speak to the adults in our life, but do so with hope and do so with optimism, right? And you see that reflected in the approach to the campaign. I'd say you see that in Angela's comments right here. And so in addition to the education on the warning signs, language you can use when having a conversation about how you can reach out, you'll also see stories from young Californians. And those stories are stories of hope and triumph and being on the other side of some of these issues and taking things one day at a time and moving forward.
In Depth will return after a moment.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
Now we hear from Joy Alafia, Executive Director of the California Association of Marriage and Family Therapists, who is one of the many supporters of Assembly Bill 665, which goes into effect July 1st. The goal is to make mental health care more inclusive for all youth, regardless of income, and ensure they receive the support they need. Thank you so much for joining me in this conversation on In Depth.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with Assembly Bill 665. What was behind the creation of this bill? Were there things that those in the mental health care world were seeing that made it that much more important to take action on?
Yeah, great question. I would say this is a continuation of a bill that was passed over 10 years ago. SB 543 was authored by Mark Leno, and it sought to provide rights to teens to provide their right to consent to mental health treatment. And that was for really folks, young people 12 years or older. That bill passed without any opposition and had a gaping loophole where it excluded those young people of the same age that were on Medi-Cal. So Assembly Member Wendy Carrillo authored AB 665. It was co-sponsored by many groups, including Generation Up, the California Alliance for Child and Family Services, the California Children's Trust, Cal Voices, the National Center for Youth Law, and the National Health Law Program, as well as Children's Partnerships, just to name a few. There was just broad coalition of support of providers, advocates, and legislators, as well as community organizers that sought to address this gap and address the inequities, frankly, that existed and the disparity in the availability and access to mental health care.
And you touched on it there, the kind of broad support that this bill was getting, and that really does point to how vital it is to so many people. What are some of the mental health challenges that are being felt by young people who are also facing economic distress?
Well, I think there are quite a few things that can impact low-income youth. There are social stressors that are often associated with poverty, and poverty itself is its own type of trauma. And there are studies that show a direct link between poverty and increased mental health challenges. And also, we know that oftentimes poverty disproportionately affects people of color. And so this trauma intersects with the trauma of racism. And we also just know it's much harder for low-income youth to access mental health treatment, and that this might be due to the number of counselors available in the schools, or just counselors in general in low-income areas as a whole. And this is somewhat reflective of the fact that we have a behavioral workforce shortage, and where that gap can be particularly pronounced is in within the Medi-Cal population.
Well, speaking of Medi-Cal and the coverage there, how is this going to help either improve access or boost the ability for access for young people when it comes to mental health care and being on Medi-Cal?
So just fundamentally, being able to qualify and have these services paid for is just a huge barrier that can be addressed immediately to access the care. So, you know, for more than a decade, the peers of many folks with private insurance have been able to access mental health professionals and therapists, but low-income adolescents on public insurance plans couldn't. They did not have that same opportunity. So this prevented some providers from working with youth insured by Medi-Cal and put up unnecessary and inequitable barriers for some kids just because they come from a lower income family. So it's really important to ensure that young people can now consent to outpatient mental health services just as their peers. And this legislation will eliminate those disparities that, you know, restrict access previously and give access regardless of income.
Let's look at this more broadly now. In your work, what have you seen change over the years when we're talking about mental health conversations, not just with young people, but with everyone? Because it does seem that the stigma isn't as strong, but these can still be hard conversations to have.
I am encouraged when I look at especially young people and a lot of the pop music or celebrities that are very open and sharing their mental health journey and taking that care and recognizing that it's a great support to have a therapist to help one with their mental health challenges or just frankly their life journey as a whole. And I'm really encouraged to see young people embrace this in general. That said, we also do see, you know, within families, within certain cultures, the older generation, some of those stigmas may still exist. So, you know, I think that's another kind of twist to this legislation for those young people who may come from families that frankly don't see the relevance or need or value in seeking therapy, that the fact that the kids are now empowered to do so is really encouraging.
Well, I heard you mention there, you know, that some young people, even though they are having these conversations and are more aware, that those in their family might have a harder time having those conversations or not even wanting to bring it up at all. Is that something that you've seen as well? And do you think that speaks on how we treat mental health? Like, are we taking it as seriously as we need to?
You know, one of the youth advocates for this bill provided testimony where she shared just firsthand in her family that this was not something that once she felt that coming from a low-income family that it she didn't want to burden her parent with something that she felt was kind of a journey where she needed help. And she thought that this would be an avenue for her to seek help and not have to necessarily explain or educate why this is so important. And there is still a parental role in many of these cases. These therapists still work with the parents when the youth come to them to make sure that the parent is informed, except in those instances where there may be a risk to the child because of the parent. So it's not to say that parent involvement is not important. It is important when it's safe. And so that's really what's key here. And also allowing the child to take some autonomy and seek support when needed. There's just a lot I feel that young people are facing as well. So I'm encouraged by the, I'm just gonna say enlightenment that they have around mental health. And then when you look at, you know, the impacts of mass shootings, school shootings, even if it's not at your school, certainly just having that in the news, it seems like it's just a higher degree of frequency now. Learning about just other social media impacts on the mental health of youth and particularly young girls. There's just so many things that are happening that are increasing the amount of depression that we're seeing in young people, the rates of suicidal thoughts and tendencies are increasing. And so there's a dire need here. And the Surgeon General just issued an advisory. This is an extremely rare move regarding the country's youth mental health crisis. So there's a recognition here that we are at a crisis point. And we need to deploy all resources and all avenues to address that.
This episode and past episodes of In Depth online at kcbsradio.com. You can also hear In Depth episodes on the Odyssey app on your smartphone. Thanks for listening. For KCBS and In Depth, I'm Mary Hughes.
listening to KCBS In Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit KCBSRadio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.